morning, everyone. Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only
King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Great joy that come together today celebrating the birth of the Christ. After about 4 hours of sleep last night, I was awoken with the most beautiful vibration coming through the spheres, this music of the spheres. And then I got up and this article seemed to read, to write itself, and it's entitled The Shepherd's Watch. The night stars glowed overhead. It was lambing season, and the shepherds kept watch all night so the lambs would be kept safe. Some shepherds half-dozed, and some watched the night sky progress as constellations passed from horizon to horizon. Somewhere they knew, sages knew the portents of those progressions. That night they were in awe, for a bright light was above, unbeknownst to them. Three planets combined to make a great display. Distant wise men knew something of this. The shepherds did not have the training, but they often watched night's rotation. They knew it was special, knew it meant something. Those shepherds who kept awake were of saintly character. They went to the temple, kept the commandments, but perhaps more than that, they kept watch. For what they kept watch, they did not know. A mystery, something larger than themselves. They felt it for a long time now, many years. A wonderful potential was about to be released. These simple men, dressed in rough woolens, smelled of sheep and nature's soil, uneducated to the world, but wise in simplicity. They watched the brightness overhead and wondered, felt a quickening that did not allow sleep, and they watched, filled with an expectation unknown. Then it happened, an opening between this world and another. Like an aurora borealis, light danced in the darkened night. They felt something, a thrill and a pulsation of energy in the air that moved with waves of light. A bit overwhelming, like standing on the edge of a great height. Yet that light seemed to communicate something, a calming that said, "Do not be afraid." Fascinated, they kept watch, fully caught up with attention bright. Then they heard it. Was it a sound in the air or inside them? They could not tell. But they heard it and were thrilled. Now they were grouped together. Excuse me. It was music, voices and voices that sounded beautiful, so beautiful and indescribable, like nothing they had heard before, a song without words or melody and so sweet. In hearing it, some swooned. Those hardy shepherds melted in the hearing. Was it sound or vibration? Was it song or bliss? It was both. An event of extraordinary dimensions was occurring. They had somehow known all their lives that this was to happen. In fact, it was for this moment they were born. They knew this now. They knew this was a fulfillment, that was made of a promise. From the foundations of the world, this night was meant to be. Now they were grouped together. Shepherds were themselves herded by some unknown force. A magnetic power moved them down the hill. They were willing slaves to what was happening now. This force guided their steps as they wordlessly moved. They knew the moving light in the sky, the magnificent strains of music, and this guiding force were all connected. Where were they going? They did not care. Would they return? They did not know. Heaven had opened its floodgates this night, and they had no will of their own. Step by step, they were herded down the hill, and on that hillside there were caves, partly dug into the hill, partly built with stone and timber. To one of these caves they came, and somehow the intensity of the feeling of that night seemed to be concentrated in that cave, that whatever was going on overhead was concerning the inside, right here. The light of the star, the rolling light, the incredible music, and this shepherding force was all connected here, and they shuddered, for it was powerful beyond them in too many ways. They found courage somehow and entered in. For all they knew, they would be swallowed in a great flame of yawning infinite chasm. However, this is not what they saw. Inside this cave was a lamp glowed. A smell of damp earth awoke them from their shaking. And some stabled animals made for a familiar scene. And there was a family, a man whom they recognized as a tradesman, probably a carpenter judging by his clothes and hands, and a pretty young wife. And most amazing, without being amazing, was their newborn baby boy, who drew all their attention once they took in the scene. At one and the same time, he was an ordinary newborn, tiny, with tiny sounds, but extraordinary at the same time. For they knew this child had drawn them to this place. The light in the heavens, the music, the star, were all heralds for him. And yet here he lay like a helpless babe. Their minds reeled back and forth, heaven and earth, as above, so below, human and divine. Then the babe opened his eyes, and such peace flooded them, a peace that seemed to extend to all men, to the whole world. And their inner quaking stopped. They knew all was well, that they and all the world is now blessed. Divinity was born in this tiny form. And some of them openly wept. Some prayed out loud. Some went inside themselves, and new worlds were revealed. Who was this child? No history or name, no pedigree did they know. No grand palace in which this princely child was born. But in simplicity, seeking shelter in a rough barn, earthy as they themselves were, yet connected with the vast events above as well. The mother and father smiled in acknowledgement to these shepherds, as if they understood why they had come, as if they too were in awe of these events, this child. And they nodded to each other as mutual acquaintances. And now it was time for them to go. As they slowly backed out, it was like tearing off their own skin to leave. Yet they knew it was time. They emerged, as it were, as from the womb of the cave. But they did not go empty-handed, for they were changed. A deep and abiding peace lingered around them, never to leave. They wended their way up the hill wordlessly. In fact, since they had first observed the star above, they had been in wordless wonder. Yet they had moved together as one being. And now they went to their separate flocks without speaking, filled with awe and a joy and contentment. Each one knew they could die right then and die fulfilled. Many went on to live for many years, keeping the sacred night carefully secure in their hearts. Who could they tell? Who would believe them? What words could describe it? Sometimes they talked quietly among themselves, and they knew. They knew the truth of what they experienced. They knew they had acted as one person, and they had been witness to an event far beyond their understanding. Yet they knew intimately exactly what they had experienced. They were the shepherds, chosen by some inexplicable means to be witness to events beyond their understanding. Yet they knew it was for that purpose they had been born. And reading from Paramahansa Yogananda, what is a divine incarnation? Incarnations of God are not souls who are dropped as perfect beings from heaven, imported into the world by God, but those beings who by effort and meditation have removed all ignorance, knowing themselves in the earthly incarnation as perfect external manifestations of the potentially perfect images of God. One who truly knows God becomes God himself. The sunlight equally shines on the charcoal and diamond lying side by side under the open sky during a clear day. In spite of the impartiality of the sun, the diamond, by its own transparency, reflects the light of the sun more than the charcoal. Thus, in spite of God's impartiality, wise men reflect his light more than the ignorant. Prophets use their heaven-given independence to tune their free will with God's wisdom's will, guided will. Ignorant people use their free will to allow themselves to be controlled and misguided by their whims, moods, prenatal habits, and instincts. Therefore, different home-returning God's devotees are judged according to the qualitative and quantitative good they do to themselves and to the world. The difference between qualitative and quantitative good. Qualitative good consists in creating Christ-like qualities in self and others. Quantitative good lies in converting the thoughts of self and others to think only of moral principle minus God, or with imaginary ideas about him. Great reformers may be well-read moralists, swaying thousands by the personality of their beliefs, but without any knowledge of God. These I call performers of simple, quantitative, good actions. Only men of realization, who have constant God contact within themselves, and who have actually helped others to possess Christ perception, are spoken of as having performed highest qualitative good actions for self and others. What could be qualitatively greater than to find God and show others the way to find him? Christ, Krishna, my supreme masters, Babaji and Lari Mahasya, have done qualitative good for themselves and others. They had Christ contact, and they made many actual Christs. Jesus made 11 Christs, whose teachings descended through their disciples, gradually lost their practical force, and remained only as an influence to guide the masses to follow a simple, quantitative, theological goodness. It was part of original Christianity that taught this qualitative being, that is, to have actual contact with God. And now that has become so far removed from many of the theological bents of different churches that it is considered heresy to think that you could actually tune into the mind of God, that you could contact God, that you could feel God, that you could merge your little being into his great being. And this is a great travesty to mankind. It is the greatest travesty, really, because embedded in this notion that you cannot know God, you cannot touch God, you cannot feel God, that God is some distant entity that you can pray to and perhaps at His whim will answer your prayer, but don't you dare talk about or think about actually knowing Him. And yet this is the great promise. It is said that in the 1 John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. The same came as a witness to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not the light, but he was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came into his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. And this is the absolute truth. The light, which is the light of every man, every individual, every part of creation, is shining with this divine light. As with my own experience this morning and hearing this wonderful music of the spheres not being played on the radio, not being remembered as some memory about something that I had heard once, but opening to this wonderful vibration that is thrilling the ethers even now. It is all around us. Now you say, how can that be? And I don't know it. But all we have to do is look around and see the practical aspects of radio or television. And when we know that there are radio waves and television waves all around us, but we are not in tune with them, so we don't receive them unless we do it through a mechanical television. So there are God waves that are constantly around us. And this is the wonderful news, this is the great news that has been promised by Jesus and all the great ones down through the ages, that we might attune ourselves to that divine radiation and feel the effect and know the effect of divine consciousness. It is a reality. It is not something that is just theory. It's not something that we just hear about and we have to accept as a belief system. But rather, we are given the means and the methods to be able to really attune ourselves to that God consciousness. And that we might, if we would choose to, so surrender ourselves to that divine consciousness that we would merge this little self into the great self of the divine being. We would become one with that. We would become, at that point, sons of God. These two designations, Son of Man and Sons of God, is a very important distinction. The Son of Man is that which pertains to the body. And most people live in a Son of Man consciousness. That is, they are defined and confined to human sense of consciousness, and they are ignorant of these divine emanations that are being broadcast all around us. But that we can become a Son of God. How? By receiving this Christ light. Now the Christ existed long before Jesus took incarnation. Jesus was the Christ formation. He came as a form of this Christ consciousness. He had established himself as this Christ. And therefore when he took incarnation, there was no ignorance that came upon him during that incarnation. And yet he still had to go through tests. He went out to the desert and he fasted and he was tempted. Now, it could not really be a temptation unless he felt temptation. Therefore, he was tempted, or it counts for nothing. But he felt the draw of that, felt the draw of power. Can you imagine how heady it becomes when you begin to sense that you can control events, that through your words, through your thought, through your energy, you can begin to change things, even if you have positive intent. You can imagine how that might draw you, how you could become special, how other people would admire you, how powerful you would feel. And this is the kind of temptation that Jesus felt. And it's symbolically the devil put him up on a high tower and looked out over the world. You could have control over this entire world if you will bow down to me. Now, who is the devil? The devil is that consciousness inside of us that is separated from God and who's in it just for the ego, just for me and mine and what's in it for me. And Jesus, in that moment of temptation, was able to see through the ruse, see through the temptation. And in that moment, he said, no, no. It is my Father who doeth the works. I of myself am nothing. This is totally opposite to what the ego would like to do. The ego would like to puff itself up, make itself special. The ego doesn't like to hear that saying, I of myself am nothing. But it is the truth. It is the truth. And when we come to that place of surrender, when we come to that place of emptiness, we have to face the fear, what will I be? Will I become a nothing? Will I die? Will there be nothing of me left at all? And in facing that, we come through that. And now we're an empty cup that this divine consciousness can begin to fill up. But it cannot come in and fill us up until we become empty. We become empty. And so this birth that comes in has both an external truth and an internal truth. Thus far, I've spoken more about the outer conditions. But the inner conditions is for every being on this planet has the capacity for receiving the Christ, and that the Christ can be born right within you. Now, what creates those conditions is when there's an expectancy, when there is an openness, when there is a keen desire for the birth of that Christ consciousness. I remember shortly after meeting Mother, and I was sitting with my eyes closed, and suddenly that beautiful five-pointed star appeared before my inner vision, and it wasn't something that I could have manufactured on my own, not ever. And it was beautiful. And it remained for about 5 minutes, and I just watched it. And this was a signal that something was beginning to move. Something was beginning to open up at this ajna, this point between the eyebrows. This light begins to shine upon us. This is the star that was seen by the wise men. And who were the wise men? The wise men represented three qualities. They presented before the Christ gold and myrrh and frankincense. Now the gold is that which represents our attachment to the things of this world. It is the fool's gold that we exchange for the gold of the Spirit without knowing how much we give up when we become attached to money and to things and to our appearance and all the rest of it. And that becomes more important than being able to focus our minds upon God. And so the first wise man puts down the gold, surrenders it at the feet of the Christ. The second comes with frankincense, and that is the worship. That is the sweetness of devotion. And that is given at the feet of the Christ. And it's surrendered there. It's let go of. And the mind totally merges itself into this Christ form, into this beautiful light that is within you. And you give everything of yourself all the sweetness, all the love, all the devotion into the Christ spirit. And then there is myrrh. What is myrrh? It's bitterness. So it was an extremely valuable herb, but it's very, very bitter. Now we have to surrender that bitterness. Now most people would hear that and say, well, that's no problem. Who wants bitterness? And yet we find that people cling to their misery. They have their stories, and they tell their stories over and over again about how life has been unfair, about how people have been unkind, how they've not been recognized in this world. And they hang on to it. They're attached to it. And you think, well, that's insanity. Why would we ever do that? And it's because we're afraid that there's nothing else but that. If we let go of that, who will we be? What will we be? And we don't know. So we hang on to the bitterness. We hang on to the myrrh. And that, too, has to be surrendered at the feet of the Christ, this beautiful divine light that is within you. And when you do that, then you are set off onto a great adventure, but it's not the end of the dangers. Because then Herod rises up. What is Herod? Herod is the passions that are within you. And it's a sexual drive, and it's a drive for things of this world, and it wants what it wants. And it's willing to run over anybody or anything to get what it wants. And it wants to kill this Christ light within, because to surrender it to it, it's an anathema. To this Herod consciousness that is within you, it's determined to keep itself on the throne. It does not want to surrender the throne to anyone or anything. And so Herod rises up inside of you. And even if you've not had great kinds of passions before, they hit you like a great storm, and they shake you to your foundations. And you have to leave that place. You have to not get overrun by these passions. And the Christ family goes down to Egypt. And Egypt symbolically represents the base of your spine. Because his mother taught us that the pineal and the pituitary gland both have secretions, and they come together every 29 and a half days. And it's a land of milk and honey. One is milk-like in substance, the other is honey-like in substance. Comes together and it forms a master seed, or a Christ seed. And that comes down the ganglionic nervous system and is deposited in a small cave-like structure behind your stomach. Bethlehem means house of bread, and that is your stomach area. And it comes down, and that's when Herod threatens to destroy it. So they go down to Egypt. Egypt is at the base of the spine. And in this case, it represents the polar opposite to divine consciousness. And it goes into hiding there, you might say. And it is held there for a certain amount of time because it's not expelled through sexual energy as what the body is wanting to do during this time. And then this energy begins to get released up the spine. This is the kundalini energy within you. It is the serpent energy. And it's very interesting in the Old Testament, which is talking about how man goes out from God. The serpent energy is seen as something negative in the story of Adam and Eve. But when you start that return circuit, both in the case of Moses and the case of Jesus, it's seen as positive. That Jesus talks about lifting up that serpent of energy in your spine. And that's what begins to carry the Christ seed. And the Christ comes up from each one of the chakras. Now there are six major chakras, sub-power stations, along in your spine. And each one has a duality. There's a positive and a negative charge to each one of them. And this represents the 12 disciples of the Christ seed. And as this Christ seed, see, it's not just a seed, it's consciousness. And it rises up through each one of these chakra systems. And as it does so, it gathers to itself the disciples of each one of those chakras. And so it's gathering them and coming up, and you're having to face the positive and the negative. You're having to draw them into this Christ consciousness. And they don't understand, and they rebel, and they have difficulty along the way. And this is all portrayed in the scriptures, describing what these 12 disciples go through. And one of them ultimately betrays the Christ and has to be replaced at some point, because that is the negative energy in the sexual chakra. And it is greed, and it has to go. And so you go through that experience, and you go through each one of those experiences. Now, not everybody goes through everything that's described. It depends on your own individual karma, your own individual psychological makeup. But you go through these experiences, and you feel this tremendous kundalini force coming up your spine. The first time that I had this, I was in a meditation group, and suddenly I felt and inwardly heard a snap, a very loud and powerful snap at the base of my spine. And this energy streamed up through my spine and came up to my ajna, here at the point between the eyebrows. And it did it so powerfully, I was just rooted into that ajna, into that chakra there at the point between the eyebrows. And it became tremendously hot. Felt like that I could fry eggs on it. It was just so hot like that. And that went on for some time before it began to subside. But that was the beginning, just the beginning of this very long journey of going back to God. Now, why is it a long journey? Shouldn't it be shortened? And in truth, it is. If we were able to see how long we have wandered from God consciousness, how long we have been governed by our own ego and by our own whims and our own desire natures and our own fears, we see that in relative term, it's a very short amount of time that we have to go through in order to get back to God consciousness. But it seems like a very long time when we're in it, because we desire God more than anything of this world. I can't even take any credit for having desired God. There is a time in my life when I prefer not to have that desire. I wish that I had been ordinary, as I conceived other people being, not being bothered about these things that were spiritual. It was a tremendous cost on me. But eventually I began to see that it was a great blessing. And as I attuned my mind to it, I began to see that this was the greatest promise that a human being can fulfill. Because contained within God consciousness, contained within this birth of the Christ that happens right inside of you, resides all the fulfillment of your heart's desire. Now, when we look at desire nature, it is endless when it comes to this world. We want this and we want that, and we think, oh, if I get that, then I'll be happy. But we get it, and we're happy for a little while, and then we're unhappy again. And then we're on to the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, and it is an endless night of desire. And we always think, oh, just I can just turn this corner, if I can just get a little financial independence, if I can just find somebody who loves me, if I can just find the right circumstances in life, the right job, whatever it is that we imagine, then I will be happy. This is a lie from the very beginning. True, it can create a temporary sense of happiness, but we know from our experience, and you would think that would have become self-evident to us after a while. It is like a child who begs and begs and begs for a certain toy or present, and then Christmas comes around and they get it and they're so ecstatic. And with a month or two, it's lying out in the rain, neglected, no longer sought after, and they're on to the next thing. What's next? And this is the way our desire nature is. Only God can fulfill all the heart's desire. Only divine consciousness can touch that place inside of us that we yearn to be filled so greatly. But we attach it to all these objects into the world, meeting the right person, having enough money, having the right clothes, you name it, having other people admire us, whatever it is. And believe me, this world is made up of mixed nature, and you will never get it. And just look at the tabloids and the people who have had success, money and fame and all the rest of it. And do you see happiness in those pages? You see drug addictions, you see divorces, you see upsets, and it's spread all over the pages. How would you like to have your life spread all over the pages, whether it's true or not? Doesn't make any difference as long as it sells papers. That is not freedom. It is not happiness. It is not joy. That comes from inside. And whether you have a lot or whether you have a little, do you find joy within you? Whether you have friends around you or whether you're alone, do you have joy and peace within you? If you are living a life that is busy and has all kinds of good activity, do you have joy? Do you have ever new joy that's bubbling up inside of you, whatever else is going on? This is absolutely the test as to whether we are experiencing God or not. And if we are not, then we are missing the goal. We are missing the point. That is what sin originally means. Like an archer who misses the target. It's not that you become a terrible person. You've missed the target. You've misused your own will, your own mind. You've targeted the wrong thing. And as a result of that, you reap misery. You reap misery. So at this time of year, when we celebrate this birth of Christ and this upliftment of spirit, let us remember these inner teachings. It is wonderful to celebrate with music and with friends and with family. But more importantly, spend that time seeking out God. Take some time, meditate deeply, and open your heart to this Christ light. Know that it is there, even if you close your eyes and you see nothing but darkness. Proceed on, knowing that there is an inner light awaiting you, awaiting to find expression inside of you. But if you fill your mind and you fill your desire nature with everything but God, where was there room for God in you then? You become like a tiny little cup that's already filled, overflowing with all the things of the world. There is no room for God. But you empty out that cup and you go to the ocean of God, and God fills that cup. And then that cup expands and your ability to contain more and more. You can tell your own progress in one way. In the past, if a certain amount of God consciousness came to you, you feel like you were filled to bursting. But now, you contain all of that fairly easily. But God is constantly stretching you. And I tell you, He will stretch and stretch and stretch you until He breaks the cup completely. The cup dissolves into the ocean, and you become an oceanic expression of divine spirit. Now, to some, that may just sound like words, but it is the truth. And I can tell you that it is the truth because I have experienced it, and I know it. And this is the time in order to really begin to explore this wonderful Christ spirit inside of you. It is not that the Christ was born on a particular day. Lambing season actually comes in the springtime, in March, in that part of the world. And that's more likely the time being described, because it never says December 25th was the birthday of the Christ. It doesn't say that. something that was manufactured. And they probably are a few months off. But the literal interpretation doesn't mean so much. It is this expectancy. It is this openness. Can you imagine the skies beginning to open as the barrier between heaven and earth begins to dissolve? And how thrilling and how wonderful and exciting that is. If you're not feeling excitement about your spiritual path, it's because you have a dull mind. And you've not really tapped into what God is. I like to tell people that whatever your passion is, whatever you think, if you think travel is the most fantastic thing to do, or you think that a certain hobby or a certain profession is the most thrilling, the best thing in the world, that is a tiny subset of what God is, because God has created everything that is. And that's but a tiny subset. So as exciting as that thing is, whatever it is that you focus on, it's a tiny little element of what God is. And God is all of that and more. Our lack of imagination, our lack of openness to divine consciousness is astounding. And it's foolish, because once we begin to open to the divine consciousness, we think, why did I ever dally? Why did I ever wait even a moment and not really turn my attention to this from the very beginning? I was a fool. I ran after the fool's gold of this world. I didn't surrender it at the feet of the Christ. And truly it is the pearl of great price. We have to pay the price. We have to face ourselves and everything that we have done. But you know, grace is always inside of you. And the past is just that. It is the past. So don't worry about it. We have a new Cross and Lotus Journal out. And just a small part of Mother's talk, which she entitles A Year of New Beginnings. Let us make this a year of new beginnings. New beginnings, begin a new life. Let go of everything that's gone behind. You see, if you want to spend the time in feeling guilty about all the things you should have done and the things that you did which you should not have done, you're going to be in a very sorry state, and you're not going anyplace. Ask God's forgiveness. He knows that you're sorry. He's forgiven you even before you asked Him. And then forget about it. Whatever else has happened in the past has brought you to this moment of awareness, to this moment of realization in Him. And if you have even put your feet on the first rung of the ladder, it is all very wonderful and blessed experience of growth. So take it as that. Do not take it as sin. Do not take it as that. Forget sin. Think only of God and His great love for you, and He will lift you up into His arms of everlasting bliss and hold you safe forevermore. Are these not wonderful words of healing and of promise? Forget the past. Everyone's past is filled with a graveyard of old bones and broken promises, misguided thoughts and actions. Everybody does. I was thinking one time about how Jesus and Babaji and the great ones must look upon us poor little human beings, striving to do God's will, but doing a very poor job of it. And how they must look down on us as little ants and pathetic little creatures. And God instantly corrected me, and He says, no, it's not like that. These great masters have been through incarnations even as you have been. They too have been tempted. They too have gone down wrong, blind alleys. They too have made a mess of things. They too have felt weak and ignorant and hopeless and despaired. But one thing they know about themselves and about you. Because when they think on you, they look out through your eyes. They think through your thoughts. They know you intimately and exactly what you face. But they know something you don't know. They know that ultimately, this led them all to their realization of their oneness with God. And therefore, they see that in you, even when you cannot see it in yourself. And that is a saving grace. And so when we feel bad about things and about our lives and how we've wasted our lives, let go of it and turn your mind onto God and get busy, as Mother would say, and get your own God realization. This is all that God is interested in. You think about if you have a child and you see that child growing up and they make some bad mistakes. But then they get on track with things. They start to correct themselves. And how proud you are. How joyful you feel for them. And suddenly the past is the past when you see them making efforts. It's gone. You don't care about that anymore. Now you're thrilled at their victories. You're thrilled at their new life. Now, as imperfect parents, if we can feel that towards our own children, how much greater does God feel that towards us? At the moment we turn our minds towards Him. The beautiful story that Jesus tells about the prodigal son. And that when the prodigal son is still at a great distance, but making effort to get back home, doesn't feel worthy. Not even sure if his father will receive him. His father sees him at a great distance and runs out to him. Runs out to him. Gathers him up in his arms. And prepares everything for him. You see, this is how God is with us. Once he sees us making any effort, that's the opening he's been looking for. And now he can gather us up in his arms and we can feel his peace and his joy and his bliss and his light. And now we would never exchange it for anything that this world has to offer. Nothing. It's not worth it. And this is the way that it is when we really have the Christ born within us. Promises a peace that surpasses all understanding. And so to feel that peace, to live in that peace, and to allow it to transform your being so that that Christ child may be born within you and find fulfillment of its ultimate purpose, which is oneness with God. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. bliss. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the light within you.